From the Rams studio, connected by AT&T, welcome to Between the Horns. Miles Simmons, DeMarco Farr is to my left today. This is a little odd,
yeah.
But who cares, because the Los Angeles Rams are the 2017 NFC West Division Champions.
Yes, Mr. Simmons.
Oh, stop.
You have a jacket on, so it's Mr. Simmons now.
Where's
Miles? Where's the guy with the vest? I want to talk football with Miles, not Mr. Simmons, not the substitute teacher. No, I'm kidding. Good stuff. No, I mean, yeah. Great. I mean, I've been saying it for a while. It sounds great. Try it on for size. L.A. Rams, NFC West Division Champions.
Yeah.
That sounds really good. It doesn't sound far-fetched. This team has really, really earned it.
Yeah.
Yeah, from camp to now, they've got nothing but better, and they stayed together. How many miles have they traveled this year?
So many.
Yeah, wow.
So many times we've been on planes.
Yes.
Yeah, wow.
I don't know that many teams that could handle that with a first-year coach.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, we talked about this back after the London trip, mm-hmm. right? Like, that was a trip where you were able to go into Jacksonville. Your offense didn't have the best day. We know how good that Jacksonville defense mm-hmm. is now. But special teams came through with the win. The defense came through with that win. And then you stay in Jacksonville where you could have been distracted all week.
Right.
You fly over to London.
At a resort.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. You fly over to London.
Yeah.
And then you still defeat the Cardinals 33-0. And
yeah.
I think that was really just a point in the season where you say, all right, like, boom, that's where you say you take control of the division, I think.
Yeah.
And now here we are, it's December 26th, then boom, you know, the Rams are going to host a playoff game.
A mud hole in Arizona, then you come back for a bye, then you go to New York and do the exact same thing.
Right.
In the middle of all that, from New York to now, to Tennessee, you lose Robert Woods, your arguably your most productive, best receiver,
yeah.
and you don't miss a beat.
You don't.
Guys just pick up the pace. Receivers pick it up. Todd Gurley picks it up. Your offensive line picks it up. This is funny. You may have a Pro Bowl quarterback, or you're going to have a Pro Bowl quarterback.
You will, probably, yeah.
Possibly an MVP running back, and not a single Pro Bowler on the offensive line. You tell me how that's possible, NFL.
Well, yes.
You tell me how that's possible.
There should be at least two, I firmly believe.
I mean, yeah.
Andrew Whitworth is a first alternate.
Possibly three with your center.
Yes.
The guy's been tremendous.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, your whole left side from your center out should have gotten Pro Bowl consideration, in my opinion.
Yeah, no, I would agree with you. And obviously, we watch these games every week, and we see these guys every day. So it's a little bit different, mm-hmm. I think, from our perception than a national one. But at the same time, yeah, you don't get to where you are without those guys doing what they've done. And I mean, particularly Roger Saffold, because
yeah.
of how he's been able to play so well with Andrew Whitworth to his left and then John Sullivan to his right.
I think those two guys have been great for him, but just allowing Roger to be a left guard
mm-hmm.
and just maximize your ability there has been terrific. But lost in all this about Sean McVay talking to Jared Goff pre-snap. Right? I mean, that's been overblown in my opinion.
I agree.
The guys out wide may or may not be affected by what goes on
mm-hmm.
When Jared Goff changes the play. Todd Gurley may or may not be affected by when Jared Goff changes the play. Those five guys up front are changing everything on the fly.
Right.
And still, you come up with a zero Pro Bowler. That doesn't make sense. But they have been absolutely tremendous. And I still think there's more out there for them.
Yeah.
I still think they can get better.
Well, I think you can ask the question, okay, why are the Rams division champions? And you've got a long, long list of reasons, and we'll get to many of them, I think, in this show.
Mm-hmm.
But one of them is definitely that the guys up front have played together, have started all 15 games of this season together so far. They're the only team in the NFL to do that this year.
Yeah.
So that is definitely a big reason for success.
Having Andrew Whitworth here, it's funny. It's overstated sometimes, but when a guy comes in and just changes the culture of a room,
mm-hmm.
Look no farther than that guy. I mean, the toughness, the professionalism, the everything, how the offensive line is the forefront of everything you do. This has been a defensive-led football team for years, but now it's shifted back to the offense, and it starts with those guys. It starts with him out in front. So I think that could be the reason why, and luck is involved, the same five guys starting all season long, but when you have that and you talk about the same five guys, usually you're talking about that team either as a champ or moving into the playoffs mm-hmm. in some way, shape, or fashion. So it's been great. Even when they go down in the game, Andrew Whitworth missed time, fought his butt back to get back in.
Yeah.
Rob Havenstein missed time, fought his way back into the lineup. John Sullivan, same thing, missed time, fought his way back into the lineup. So these guys refuse to come out, it means a lot more to them than just starts. Yeah. It means everything to them.
Yeah, it does. That's not really the way I thought we were going to start off this show, by talking about the offensive line. But I think it's fun, you know, because
that's people
always...
That's why they didn't have a Pro Bowler. Right there.
No.
See?
But you say...
Blame it on Miles,
no,
Mr.
you always
Simmons.
Say, you always say it starts up front. And
yes.
I think that was a good place for us to start when we're talking about the Rams being NFC West champions.
Well, you think about Todd Gurley and these majestic runs of his. Well, he didn't create the hole on his own.
Right.
And that's a traditional rush attempt. Well, the screens that have been such a big part of this Rams offense, well, guess who's out in front?
Mm-hmm.
You know, either before or after he receives the football. It's going to be those offensive linemen. Mm-hmm. And it's funny, you know, when you see a Todd Gurley, you know, touchdown run from a screen or a reception, look into the end zone and see which guys are with him.
Right.
Or right behind him. Either 77's already there or 76 is trailing the play.
Right.
And he made the key block. So, yeah, they're special. I mean, and I think the right side guys have come along. Jamon Brown has made strides. I think Rob Havenstein has made strides. And the tight ends on the outside have made tremendous strides in the run game that have helped spring Todd Gurley and in the passing game. So, but that in particular, that group, that's why I said there's more out there for this offense. This offense has room to grow a little bit more.
Well, you talk about Todd Gurley, and yes, the MVP consideration now. I mean, that freight train has really, really picked up steam. And I think if there's one play that just sort of exemplifies it, it's that 80-yard touchdown he had in that 27-23 victory over Tennessee. And it was just a play where, you know, I'm sitting there in the press box, and there's an expectation of decorum in the press box, if you will. You don't cheer.
No cheering in the press box.
Yeah, and I did not cheer. Let me be very clear on that. But I thought, like, reflecting back on it, my reaction to when Todd Gurley takes off on that play, you know, he basically makes a cut and then he's gone, and I'm sitting there saying, oh my goodness, oh my goodness. And it's funny because, you know, you listen to JB's call on the radio, Maurice Jones-Drew's like, oh, he's gone, gone. You watch it on TV, and I think it's Daryl Johnston, the color guy, is like, wow. And it's that kind of play where you just can't help but exclaim because you know you're witnessing something very, very special on the field.
I mean, you have to be in awe of ability like that. I mean, first of all, the play call to get him out in space, and then once he's in space, what he does with it. And when, like I said, when you see him outrun professional safeties, usually at free safety or any safety, that's your best athlete. Not on defense, on the team.
Right.
Your most consistent guy and your fastest guy, and he's erasing angles in a blink. Like, you may think you have him on a dead angle, and then all of a sudden it bends, and it's gone, and you're behind him. And now you're chasing him, and you're still not gaining ground until he slows down. So just special what he's doing. And I hope he gets the hardware he deserves. Mm-hmm. If not, so be it. I mean, it's all about the Lombardi Trophy anyway. But, you know, I hope the NFL gets it right this time. The best player right now is Todd Gurley, especially through the month of December,
well,
no doubt.
Yeah, I mean, you look at just all the things that he's been able to do, especially over the last couple of games, but just from the perspective of, okay, like what are his numbers right now? He's leading the league in yards from scrimmage. He's got 2,093. He's leading the league in touchdowns. He's got 19. He's leading the league in yards rushing with 1,305. And he's leading the league in rushing touchdowns. He's got 13.
Wow.
So, right. You see what I'm saying? Like, right, exactly.
Wow.
And so he's second on the team. Excuse me. He leads the team with 64 receptions, second on the team with 788 yards receiving.
Yeah. Now, completely different guy, different style of running back, but the only time I've seen that was when Marshall was in uniform.
Right.
To where there was nothing a defense can do to stop him. You load the box, he hits you out of the backfield in the passing game. Okay, you may play loose, give him a cover two, and say, we dare you to run the football. Well, he's going to make you pay for that big time.
Mm-hmm.
He gets in space in a phone booth, I like to say, with two or three defenders. I wouldn't say that it's a rare occasion where the Rams miss blocks and he's got to make a play. Well, he does that too.
Yeah.
I can stiff arm you, hurdle the next guy, and outrun the third. When you take on an entire secondary by yourself and you keep winning, look, that's MVP.
Mm-hmm.
Brady and quarterbacks, they're great. They stand in the pocket. They dissect your defense. They deliver the ball to the open man, and that guy scores, and you never move off your spot. Todd is carrying the football from A to B.
Right.
To me, that's worth more than what any quarterback can or is doing right now.
Well, I just think, again, that 80-yard touchdown, you're talking about carrying the ball from A to B, right? Like, that Those are yards that Todd Gurley gets mm-hmm. that nobody else is getting on the field, and he's able to do it because, I mean, he's fast. His vision is great. He's got guys in front of him to set him up, and then he's able to finish these plays, you know? It's just so – it's incredible to watch when you've got a guy like Adoree Jackson, who people in L.A. I know are familiar with because of what he did at USC – but he's one of the fastest guys in the league, too.
Yeah.
And so it was funny, after the game, Gurley was saying that, like, he even looked up at the Jumbotron to sort of see, like, okay, who is behind me?
Oh, yeah.
Right? You know, you kind of look in the...
fast.
Right.
Yeah.
You look in the rearview mirror, and you're like, all right. So he sees that Adoree Jackson is sort of coming up, and that's when Todd said, I took a little bit of a different angle so I could get to the end zone and make sure that I got there.
Yeah.
And that's... that's the kind of special thing that I think he's doing right
now. True. When I'm on the sideline with him and he's going, when he starts to get in that zone, you can tell when he's in that zone.
Right.
Yeah, when he's starting to take over the game, I will tell the photographers and the guys on the sideline with me, you better back up a half step. Because if he's heading down the sideline and he gets bumped out of bounds, it's going to be on a ricochet shot.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's not going out of bounds to save himself. He's going to get knocked out of bounds. And he's not going to stop until he slows down. So he may run you over to get there. And when they see it and you see how big he is and how fast he is, I mean, you start to see the sideline clear out. And you start to see defenders on the field really start to make those quote-unquote business decisions. Mm-hmm. You better get your head on the right side of him, because if not, you're going to be in concussion protocol. Mm. And I'm not saying that just to be funny. That is a fact.
Right.
If you get caught by one of those knees, or if he drops the shoulder on you and you're in the wrong position, you're going to get helicoptered and you may be out of there. Yeah, it's dangerous down there with him when he's going full speed.
I don't know. Do you ever remember, who was a running back that was like that when you were playing, where you're like, man, I gotta be sure I'm right on my technique, otherwise.
Well, Steven Jackson at his best, another Ram. I mean, big, strong, fast. When he got in the open field, you have to protect yourself as a defender, because if he dips his head, Leonard Fournette earlier, he was doing the same thing to safeties. I mean, he was knocking guys out, but. You know, Todd's looking to score. He's looking to be dynamic. But if it comes down to it and he's got to drop the shoulder on you, remember, he's got you outweighed and he's probably moving faster than you are at that moment.
Yeah. Well, just 456 yards over the last two games, yards from scrimmage, 6 touchdowns. He's averaging 8.14 yards per touch, which is ridiculous.
That's that close to being unstoppable.
Yeah.
That's a first down a touch.
Right, almost.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, which is why it's just so fun to watch him right now. And I think it's why all of the players on the Rams are basically campaigning for Todd Gurley to be MVP in the locker room after that game. I mean, it was really interesting. You had two things going on. One, a celebration, which was well-earned and well-deserved.
Mm-hmm.
And two, you had guys, I mean, yes, obviously they're prompted by the media asking them questions, but anytime somebody would ask, okay, what do you think about Todd Gurley's performance, it's MVP.
I hope I'm not telling trade secrets, but being in the locker room, and this just happened in Tennessee, and it's happened the last couple of weeks, where Todd might be the last guy in the locker room before the head coach speaks.
Uh-huh.
Because, you know, he's Todd Gurley. He's got a lot of responsibility, and people want to see him, talk to him. But the team was euphoric. They're division champs. Everybody's happy and jumping around. But it didn't go to, like, level 10 until Todd came in.
Really?
As soon as the team saw him, they went berserk.
Hmm.
They went absolutely, I can't even tell you what they did, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
They went berserk when they saw him, and it's like, okay, now the party can start.
Yeah.
So, I hope they don't have to, like, proclaim very loudly about how good he's been and how valuable he is to this football team, because it should be obvious. If you're paying attention, that's your MVP.
Right. I mean, he had 276 yards from scrimmage in that game against Tennessee. And the other thing he did, it's something that had only been done twice before in the entire history of the National Football League, and that's have over 100 yards rushing and 150 yards receiving. That's only been done twice before in the league.
Yes.
And the last time it happened was in 1986 with Herschel Walker, who is another Georgia running back.
Well,
so that's kind of cool.
Now you understand what I mean when I say ambient player.
Yeah.
Every coordinator in the world is saying, how do we stop him?
Right,
yeah.
Because he can hit you in so many different ways.
Right. If we're weak here, McVay's going to exploit it.
Yep.
Even if we've got it sewed up, he can find a way out. So eventually, you're going to have to deal with the fact that Todd Gurley is going to be in space in the open field against your secondary.
I mean, what are you going to do about it?
Right. I mean, all you can do is tell your guys, get him on the ground.
Yeah.
Because eventually, it's going to happen. So whether or not he hits the end zone is dependent on how well you tackle at that moment.
Mm-hmm.
And if you miss, you saw what happened in Tennessee. he can go from anywhere.
Well, it's funny. I just think about everything that people were kind of saying last year about Todd Gurley. You know, does he have the vision? What's going on? Yeah. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And then you now see him, and it's basically like, oh, so this is why the Rams drafted him at number 10 overall, coming off that ACL injury after what he did at Georgia. And it's why, you know, he was the 2015 Rookie of the Year, yeah. Offensive Rookie of the Year, I should say. It's all of these things that, you know, now in this scheme, with the way the offensive line is playing, with the way the guys on the outside are playing, mm-hmm. like Robert Woods and Cooper Kupp and Sammy Watkins, you've now been able to really unlock Gurley's potential, I think, now based on all the other things that have happened.
I think he's better than I thought he would ever be.
Oh, you know, me too.
I thought
he'd
be one of the better running backs. I thought he'd be the next Adrian Peterson, a first, second down back that you just couldn't stop. He'd be a sledgehammer. But this whole passing game, the added dynamic, better than I ever thought he could be. So what you're going to cause is a lot of teams to reach on guys trying to get this, trying to get a guy like this.
Yeah.
And I don't think a guy like this exists right now.
I don't know that it
yeah.
does either.
I mean, I think it's the perfect storm of coach, quarterback, O-line, player.
Yes.
And the belief that you can be something better than what you think you can be.
What's funny, you know, you talk about different guys and, you know, trying to get the next, mm-hmm. et cetera, right?
It's a copycat league. Yes.
It is. It's a copycat league. And it's funny that you bring that up about Todd Gurley, because you start to hear the same things about teams and coaching changes, mm-hmm. and trying to get the next Sean McVay, right? And gosh, that's going to be really hard for any team that really wants to replicate who Sean McVay is and what he's meant to this franchise, I think, because he's such a unique individual.
Yeah.
And you look at the fact that he is the youngest head coach to ever take his team to the playoffs, and I believe yeah. I've got that stat right. That's something that's unique, I really think, because he has no ego. And a lot of times when you see young head coaches, they come in and they're trying to basically make you forget the fact that they are as young as they are. Sean McVay doesn't have to try to do that, because who he is just allows him to do his job, yeah. you know. And you can say this about you can really say this about him, I think, because of how he implemented the coaching staff. What other really young head coach can you think of that went out and got arguably the best defensive coordinator this league has ever seen, who is 69 years old?
Or one of, yeah.
Right.
Dick LeBeau's out there, too.
Dick LeBeau is
yeah,
out
yeah,
there, too.
Right.
That's what I said, arguably.
Yeah, yeah,
I said
right.
arguably, and
right.
I didn't mean to disrespect
yeah.
Dick LeBeau, because he
right.
is great. But you have that element of it. You have the guy who was the interim head coach and has been around for so long, kept him on, too.
Yeah.
It's the fact that, I don't know, the fact that McVay basically has no ego and he is all about the we and all about the team,
yeah.
that I don't think you can underplay that.
I think the league, through Sean McVay and the success this team is having, there could be a renaissance, younger head coaches.
Maybe, which
like
honestly,
yeah.
it might be better than just starting
the
to
retreads.
Go the retread,
yeah.
around
yeah.
and around and around. You've already
yeah.
shown who you are.
Sometimes you go with the unknown and you take a shot, and it works out
mm-hmm.
for certain teams. It's worked out for the Rams. So, I mean, there'll be other coordinators, young guys that might get a shot sooner than later. Maybe not head coach, but you may become a coordinator faster.
Maybe, yeah.
At a younger
yeah,
age.
Yeah.
And you'll have a chance to be a head coach at a younger age. So, look, the ego thing, I'm with you. I mean, I think he does a great job of complimenting his coaches and his players. But make no mistake about it, he wants to beat everybody.
Oh, I know.
Absolutely everybody. And not just win, into the dust. And
mm-hmm.
I respect that about him. But it's always about team first. So, yeah, all he does, from my perspective, from what I can see, is wake up, eat, sleep, football. Period.
Yep.
End of story. And I think for the most part, when you talk about the travels and everything this team has gone through schedule-wise, that's all they're about. Is just about the game on Sunday. I wouldn't say unflappable, but you know, things like that don't tend to bother them. Just like being division champs this early, I don't think it's really going to bother them.
Mm-hmm.
I think they kind of expected it and they understand it. So there's a great blend of youthful exuberance and veteran leadership, either from the players and from the coaching staff.
Right.
And the point you made about Wade Phillips, about hiring this staff, what coordinator or what guy with that sort of resume says yes to the youngest head coach ever?
Right.
Yeah. No, kid. You know what? Good luck, but no.
Yeah.
That's going nowhere.
Yeah.
You know what? I like you. I understand that. The guys that have hired you, I know. And they don't hire just anyone.
Mm-hmm.
So you already have my respect. And then I meet you, and you're everything I thought you would be. So, yes, I'll come coach you. I'll come coach with you. I'll come help you. I'll come help build this franchise. So it's been fantastic to watch, especially those two guys and those two groups come together to build one of the better staffs in the league.
Yeah, I think you really can't say enough of just about the way this coaching staff came mm-hmm. together and the way that they have really, I think, gotten the most out of all of the guys that are here.
Yeah.
You know, you've put guys in real good position to be successful.
Yeah.
And obviously, we just talked about all the things with Todd Gurley, and we were mentioning the offensive line a bit earlier too, but even Jared Goff. You know, you go back to the beginning of the season, and it's just, okay, you expect
remember
to see
the Mannion
progress.
Talk?
Yes, I remember the Mannion talk. I do remember the
wow.
Mannion talk. Do you remember the Mannion talk?
I remember all of the Mannion talk.
Mm-hmm.
That training camp was interesting.
Yeah.
Like, oh, boy, I don't know if this is going to work. This is going to be a work in progress. And I remember going into that Oakland game, the preseason game, where you started to see, wow, okay, I get it now.
Uh-huh.
I understand. When you see the entire offensive game plan together, and it was a shortened version, but it is preseason, but you saw that Rams offense manipulate that Raider defense
right.
into giving them the matchups or the open space that they wanted at will.
Yep.
I get it. Wow, this is unbelievable. This has a chance to be something special. I didn't think it was going to be 30 points a game.
I don't think anybody thought it would be 30 points a game.
Good Lord. But Jared Goff, it was obvious from the start, from that point, he can run this offense.
Mm-hmm.
He's athletic enough to run this offense. He's got enough arm to get the ball anywhere it needs to go in this offense. Physically, I think he can do it. Handling it mentally, I think, is a whole nother story.
Yeah.
He's been challenged like he's never been challenged before, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
The things he's been asked to do on the fly or week to week, and it keeps growing. Think about what it's going to be next year, 2 years from now,
right.
3 years down the road.
As you continue, the expectations only grow. And that's something that, you know, players have talked about, and they talk about embracing those expectations
mm-hmm.
and trying to match or exceed what those expectations mm-hmm. are. But just going through Goff's stat line, and, you know, we'll talk about this in a bit,
mm-hmm.
but it's unclear whether or not he's going to see the field any more in 2016.
Oh, he's going to see it. Whether he's going to take it is a different story. Yeah, you're not going out there.
Okay, Mr. Semantics.
I'm just saying,
talk
you're
going
to see
being,
the field,
talk
just
about
not going
me
out
being
there.
Substitute teacher. But he's completed 62% of his passes, 3,804 passing yards, 28 touchdowns, only 7 interceptions. And again, it's just a really remarkable kind of turnaround from year to year. And yes, you could say, all right, obviously quarterbacks from year 1 to year 2, they do take steps.
Mm-hmm.
But nobody thought that Jared Goff was going to finish this season. Nobody outside the building
mm-hmm.
really thought that Jared Goff was going to finish with a 100.5 quarterback rating this
year.
Wow,
probably
I
he
didn't
did.
Even.
Probably he did. But,
right.
I mean, look, what a difference a year makes. But, I mean, the guys they brought in, especially, like, upgrading the receiver room.
Right.
Yeah, Robert Woods, you know, being as good as advertised.
Mm-hmm.
And you had to be, I would say, a football nerd to really know that Robert Woods could be this good, because up in Buffalo, he ran great routes. The
mm-hmm.
ball just didn't get to him. You know, it was a different situation, a different quarterback, a different offensive game plan. But the route running was as precise as anybody in the National Football League, and he's brought that professionalism here.
Yes.
And you couple that with a guy who knows how to use him and Todd Gurley manipulating the defense, creating those open spaces for you. They've been tremendous. Now, Cooper Kupp, I think you're one catch away or one drop away from having a rookie of the year type season.
Are you referring to, and it's a little
that
unfortunate
one.
That we have to like say which drop, but the drop against
Seattle, yeah. That one.
Well,
it
you could also say
from Goff. Yeah.
You could also say a fumble away in Minnesota, because that would have changed the game.
Great play by Minnesota. I wouldn't take that away from anybody. But
I know. You're a defensive guy. But
that
yes.
was out of hand. That was into hands. That was a touchdown, and it just didn't happen. Now,
right.
look, he's made some great catches in Tennessee. I think he saved the day for you.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Absolutely. So he's more than made up for it.
More than once, actually.
Yeah, so I think all he cost himself with that so far is probably some hardware. But everything else being equal, the guy's been tremendous, still doesn't play like a rookie, in my opinion.
No, I don't think he does either. And I think, you know, you just said he probably saved the day against Tennessee. That was an incredible catch, in the back of the end zone on that third down in the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
And technically it is now Goff's first fourth quarter comeback
of
his career, because he's able to complete that pass.
That was like a movie. Like, I'm serious. That was like the longest yard, that last scene in the original Longest Yard was in slow motion. That ball hung up in the air forever.
DeMarco, you know I have not seen the Longest Yard.
Either one?
No.
There's a remake too.
I know.
You haven't. You don't see football movies?
I've seen some football movies, but like, come on, you know me.
Why are we even friends?
I don't know.
Look, we the only thing that connects together, us is football. Anyway, and you don't even see football movies. That's insane.
I've seen some football movies. I've seen Remember the Titans.
Dramatic movies where it's in slow motion.
The one that wears Gene Hackman and...
The Replacements?
Yeah, The Replacements. I love that
movie. That's a comedy.
It's a great movie.
Oh, my goodness. Anyway, but yes, it's... The last scene is in slow motion. That ball hung in the air forever.
It did.
It was a great route, great space, and Jared Goff, ball placement, right on the money, and Cooper Kupp doing the toe tap to. And look, I mean, I even had to like educate some fans, and I rarely do this, take my headset off and just mouth the words to people, one knee equal 2 feet. People.
Dude, I had to do the exact same thing in the press box.
Yes.
Because everybody was like, I don't think he got 2 feet. And I said, one knee equals 2 feet.
Yeah, read the rule book. But just an awesome play, great play. The thing I love most about him, catch, drop, touchdown, what have you, he's the same guy. And that reminds me of Jared Goff.
Mm-hmm.
No matter what, win, lose, same guy, flatline. So... You know, those sort of guys have a tendency to keep getting better and better and better and better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's funny. You just, the way that Cooper Kupp, I think, has emerged this year, it's something that we saw, you know, that he had the ability in OTAs and then in training camp, but you just never know how these things are going to turn out, right? Because he's a record setter in FCS. We all know that. He was an incredible wide receiver at Eastern Washington, but you have to be able to translate things to the game. And ever since he's gotten here, he has shown that he is not your typical rookie wide receiver.
No doubt.
And it's nice to see that that has translated to him being so good on the field.
Oh, no doubt. He had his Eminem moment.
An Eminem moment?
Eminem moment.
I don't know what that
means. Just follow me on this. Okay. When the first time Eminem actually took a mic and was going to rap
in
front of a crowd.
Eminem, like not like Eminem the candy.
The rapper.
Eminem the rapper.
Imagine the first time he got up to battle rap. I know there's a movie made of it, but just think in real life.
I've never seen that movie either.
You've never seen 8 Mile? I mean, just stop. Let's just stop right now. Stop the podcast. But just imagine what it was like for him the first time he took the mic. Just what people thought.
What is
this guy doing here? Yeah. And I remember back in training camp, and this is when Tremaine Johnson was, you know, really, really talking to the rest of the football team. He was that guy. And he lined up on Cooper Kupp in a 7-on-7. Or no,
one-on-one. This was in training camp. I remember what you're talking about.
And, I mean, everybody was watching, and I wouldn't say Cooper Kupp beat him like a dog, but...
He beat him.
He absolutely just beat him in a one-on-one situation.
Yeah.
And Tremaine Johnson went back and shook his hand.
Yeah.
Yeah, was respect.
He clapped.
Yeah.
He clapped, and he was like, all right,
wow.
You got me.
Now, if you can do that to your most experienced corner in that situation, you can do that to just about anybody.
Mm-hmm.
So we knew probably then this guy was going to be a player, but... I think he's been better than advertised for the most part.
For sure. I mean, and that's why he is now leading the Los Angeles Rams in yards receiving. He's got 869, so it's a good total for him, nice total for him. And he's also got 5 touchdowns and 62 receptions.
So. Oh, yeah. Yeah. The postseason, I don't think it's – we talk about a rookie wall. I don't think he's going to hit a rookie wall.
If you do hit the rookie wall, he usually comes around December because you're not usually playing games in December.
Yeah.
But with FCS, I mean, you do play those playoff games.
True.
So he might be used to playing more.
Yeah, it's a different level of football, but still it is the postseason where everything is magnified.
Right.
Yeah, one mistake and you're out. So I don't think he's going to be affected by playing in the quote-unquote postseason. I remember my first postseason game.
Mm-hmm.
I was warned that it goes up a level. Like when I was a rookie playing in the preseason, I thought I had it, you know, all made, and I knew it. They said, "Well, the regular season is going to be different, kid. Remember?"
Right.
And I felt that difference the first time I went out there. Wow, this is different. And then the postseason, the same way, it goes up a notch again.
Mm-hmm.
So you're going to feel that. Everybody on this roster is going to feel that.
Yeah.
But the best part about it is guys like Andrew Whitworth have been out there, and at least can brace you for it and get you to understand that you're going to need to raise your game up a little bit more if you think you have nothing more to give, or you're given everything you've got. Well, there's more inside you than you know, and it's going to come out. You're going to surprise yourself.
How does that kind of thing have to start happening? I mean, are they having those conversations now, do you think, starting in the locker room after you win on Sunday? You start saying, okay, like, this is great. We've taken care of this. But there, because there's more out there for us, you need to know what to expect.
Yeah, it's weird, and I've been through this to where it's week to week, day to day, and you're only worried about, you know, your next opponent. But, you know, it happened to us. We had to play Philadelphia before we got into the postseason. And it's a little bit different because you are champs now. People treat you as such. And I wouldn't say the last game doesn't matter, but your focus is just a little bit off. So I would bet those conversations have started now. Mm-hmm. But you don't want to disrespect your opponent. You don't want to disrespect San Francisco.
Right.
Get ready to play, but I bet those conversations are started now.
Yeah, it's interesting because of the situation that you're in, that the San Francisco game kind of takes on a different kind of meaning, you know, because it's not meaningless, but it's certainly not as meaningful as it would have been had you not won that game, and especially because the Seahawks won their game against the Dallas Cowboys. It's interesting.
The veteran guys could look at the younger guys who are going to play, and they'll never release it or say this publicly, but they're going to look at the guys that are going to play major snaps and say, don't let it down. You're still Rams. This is still the 49ers. We still have a game to win. You don't take a step back because I'm not playing.
Yeah.
I expect you to play as well as I would have played. So, I mean, you keep that same intensity. It's just, you know, your starters, your frontline guys probably won't play as much, if at all.
Yeah.
And you know that. I remember getting ready to play the NFC Championship game, playing Tampa Bay, when Tampa Bay was Tampa Bay, and we're talking about Super Bowl tickets before we actually played the game. You want to talk about weird? Yeah, that was something our head coach, Dick Vermeil, did not want to do.
Right,
but
I
can't
understand why. Oh, really?
Yeah, he had to, because we only had a week between games. We were going to play the Super Bowl the next Sunday. Yeah, that's
why
the year they moved it back.
Oh.
Instead of the 2 weeks, we had 1 week. So he finished the team speech. I mean, we were getting ready to play, and he said, guys, we have to. And he let the assistant head coach actually tell us. We only have X amount of tickets for the Super Bowl. This is how we do it, X, Y, and Z. Okay, forget what I just said. Go beat Tampa. It was weird, but he had to do it, yeah.
That's interesting. I didn't realize that was a year that you didn't have 2 weeks.
Yeah. We went right from one Sunday to the next.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I guess that was basically like the first year of my football consciousness.
Anyway. Oh, really? Okay. Yeah. It was
back in 99.
It was odd. And you didn't worry about the pain then. I mean, when you're that deep into the postseason, I mean, I wouldn't say your boo-boos and owies go away. I mean, they're still there, but they just got pushed to the wayside, man. I mean, what's in front of you is way more important than any sort of pain you're going to feel.
Right.
Yeah.
But what was it like? I mean, you said you had to go to Philadelphia. Just what was that sort of week like, you know, in terms of knowing that you've already clinched, knowing that you're going to be in the postseason, but you still have this regular season game to play?
It was tougher getting into the hotel.
There were more fans?
Way more fans.
Oh.
Yeah.
In Philadelphia, you're
yes,
saying?
Yes. There were way more interviews given from guys that don't usually speak.
Oh, yeah. I think that's going to happen this week.
You still think of yourself as the same old team you had in training camp.
Mm-hmm.
But then you realize that the world around you sees you as champions, as division champs, or as a front runner, as the number one seed. You're still just the guys. We're the guys trying to, you know, right the wrong, change the culture. But on the outside, you're a completely different story to the world. And once those doors open up, it's kind of surprising to you.
Huh.
Yeah. And then after a while, it becomes something you get used to. Like we said, we were in Tennessee. You saw a lot more autograph seekers, a lot more fans. A lot more fans showed up.
Yeah.
Rams fans showed up. Well, that becomes the norm after a while.
Mm-hmm.
You become used to seeing it. But the first time it happens to you, boy, it's special.
Hmm.
Yeah, it's really, really cool to see.
Yeah, and so people started talking to you. They wanted your autograph finally.
Look at this guy. Wait a minute. No. Is that a joke?
It's not really a joke. It was a question.
That just hurts.
Why did that hurt?
You're just mad because you haven't seen 8 Mile, and I called you out on it.
No.
You're the only guy in this world that hasn't seen 8 Mile. Where are you from?
I'm from Cleveland.
How could you not have seen 8 Mile?
We're not Detroit. That's the end of the Cleveland tourism video.
Well, anyway, go ahead.
At least we're not Detroit.
Right.
I do want to bring this up because...
Shoot.
It's a thing that people are talking about, and with good reason, the kicking situation.
Oh, yeah.
So we recorded our podcast last week on Wednesday, and then, of course, the Wednesday morning. Today we're recording it on Tuesday, so hopefully nothing else big happens this afternoon later. But then Greg Zuerlein, it comes out that he has an injured back and that he's going on IR, and then that the Rams are going to sign Sam Ficken, who had not even attempted a regular season kick in the NFL. came out, misses his first two, and he's affected the game, basically, in the game plan, because the Rams have an opportunity on their first drive to kick maybe a 50-yard field goal, and they don't
do it. You're in Zuerlein range.
Yes.
Yeah.
You're in Zuerlein range, and you don't do it. But then, you know, Ficken does recover. He makes the next his next three extra points, and that makes it so that the Rams can defeat the Titans the way they do.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess my question is, do you think the Rams will stay the way they are at kicker, or do you think that they're still going to evaluate it and maybe sign a different one?
You know, I don't know. I don't know how they handle that. I mean, I guess you wouldn't be wrong either way.
It's so
because
tough.
Because you had 12 guys in, and he's the guy you chose out of that
right.
out of that 12, so he's the best of that group. So what do you do, bring the same 11 guys back to compete with him again?
I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I think you just you try to support him and, you know, hope he gets better. And I think he got better towards the end of the game.
He definitely did.
Yeah,
he definitely
got
more comfortable.
Imagine how that felt. You were on the couch, and then you're out there for a potential division champion.
Right.
And you're the place kicker.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you got your yips out early. So, yeah, it may affect play calling. I think it did on Sunday. It may affect it down the stretch. But at some point, you know, it's going to be a factor. Not having your Pro Bowl kicker is going to be a factor.
Right.
It already is.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't just go out and say, all right, well, we're replacing the best kicker in the league, and it's going to be fine. Like,
yeah.
It's going to change the way things are. And I don't think that's not the worst thing in the world.
Yeah.
It's already bad enough that your kicker is not
there. If Ficken was automatic, he wouldn't have been on the street.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
That's the way it is.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It was week 16, and you have to bring somebody in.
Yeah.
And that no matter whether or not they were going to be a veteran with some experience or somebody who was passing his Series 57 on
True.
The Monday, and then he's kicking for the Rams on Sunday. Like,
yeah.
It just kind of is what
punter.
It is.
We replaced our punter in 99.
Uh-huh.
And we didn't miss a beat. I believe we had...
Replacing a punter is different than replacing a kicker.
I think we had problems with our place kicker. He got hurt in Tennessee.
Oh.
And it didn't matter.
Uh-huh.
If you have a good football team, you have a good football team, period.
True.
I'll speak for myself, sort of disrespected the Titans by saying it probably won't be a field goal game.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, from here on out, any game could be a field goal game, but
yeah.
It is what it is. You can't
right.
change it now.
No, you can't change it now. And like you were saying, I mean, he got better, Sam Ficken, I should say, got better as the game went on, and that was a critical piece of it. But the other thing, I mean, it's not just the field goals, it's the kickoffs, too.
Yeah.
Because, especially against the Titans, who have one of the better returners in the league, I think we can say, in mm-hmm. Adoree Jackson, when those things aren't going into the end zone, deep into the end zone or out of the end zone,
yeah.
you've got to make sure you cover those kicks. And Adoree Jackson made it really tough on the L.A.
True.
Doing that.
Well, it took a page right out of the Rams' playbook with that long return across the field.
Yes.
That's called an adjustment. And they did it. And that's another thing. Marquise Christian getting hurt in that football game. That's one of your best special teamers.
Yes.
Yeah, so not having that guy out there, I mean, that could be a problem. It mm-hmm. was a problem at one point. But, yeah, I mean, I have every confidence, and so do you, and so does the rest of the world. If you don't, you should. In Bones Fossil.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Especially on kickoffs. You could place it in certain areas. You could bloop kick it to make sure you limit a guy's return. You may give up 5 extra yards in field position.
Yeah.
I think your defense can handle that, but you can really limit a team from returning it,
mm-hmm.
even if you can't make it to the end zone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Speaking of special teams, do you know what happened on that play, or the kickoff, where Tennessee tried to onside it? And then basically we're told no.
Yeah, they cheated.
What happened?
Well, they tried. Well, they thought.
Because in the press box, it was really unclear.
And there was some gray area there. Was the ball spotted ready to play? Did the officials give you the windup? Are they ready for play? But usually, if they do, they'll give the other team a chance to at least put their team out there.
Right.
Yeah, so.
I don't ever recall ever seeing a team giving the wine, getting the wine, the ready to play.
Right.
Before the other team was lined up
yeah.
in any, like, it's not that they just weren't lined up. It's that they were in the huddle on the
yeah.
sideline.
There was a lot going on.
And knowing Bones Fossil like we do, knowing head coach Sean McVay like we do, that made absolutely no sense.
Right. Oh, they were livid.
Yes.
Absolutely livid. Yeah,
as they should have been.
They should have been. And I'm glad it didn't stand.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean that's... I mean, from Tennessee's perspective, I get it. Any team's perspective, if you're not ready, that's not my fault. If
yes.
I'm ready to kick
yes.
off and it's you put the ball ready for play and you're not ready, that's on you. But I mean, why would you want to steal one like that anyway?
Well, because you want to win the game.
But I wouldn't want to win that way.
But I think it was, it just seemed like it might have been an officiating error.
There were a couple.
Because it seemed like the Rams were told that there was a timeout, whether it was a TV timeout or something. And then I was reading lips on the broadcast, and it was, and one of the officials on the sideline was like, no, I said it was timeout, because you had the referee come out and say, before the play happened, Los Angeles called timeout.
Right.
And then you can see Sean McVay, again, reading lips, and he's like, no, I didn't. Didn't call timeout.
That's something they were talking about. That was a mistake.
Yes. And then I think you see the official going over, and he's pointing at himself. He says, me.
Right.
I said there was timeout.
Put it on me. Well, that was funny. There was a penalty on special teams to where Sean Mannion got called for a penalty.
Yeah.
I didn't know Sean Mannion was playing on punt team.
Right.
Yeah. Wow, really?
Not only on punt team, but he was also on the opposite. Side
yeah, line, 14 but, and white got a face mask call. Really?
There were a few issues.
R14.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the backup quarterback.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
There's only two.
Yes.
Yeah, there's Goff and him, and we're going to put that guy on punting.
Right.
Just making sure. Right. Okay.
Yeah. Again, there were a few issues there.
Yeah.
But I do also want to bring up something about the defense, and that's just the fact that Rams now have 8 takeaways on the opening possession. That's ridiculous.
Is there a stat for that? Is that a record of some kind?
I wonder if it is. I hope Elias Sports
if it is,
Bureau,
it's a newly
ESPN
created one.
Stats and Info, will help us by looking that up. Because I did ask Wade Phillips about that last week at his press conference, and he was saying the only other one that I can kind of remember being like that, you know, he's basically the encyclopedia of the league, right? So he said in the 70s, the Steel Curtain had like 4 takeaways in a row.
Yeah.
And when he was on
that
staff,
makes sense.
I think it must have been in New Orleans or in Tennessee with his father, but excuse me, it wasn't Tennessee, then it was Houston, the Oilers.
Yeah.
I'm thinking the same franchise. Anyway, but he remembers saying like, hey, like we should probably not throw it because they've had 4 interceptions in a row.
Yeah.
Like to open the game against them. But
again,
like this is
Steelers, I get. They were dominating.
Right.
Yeah.
But again, in at least half of the Rams' games this year, they will have taken away the opponent's the football from the opponent's opening possession.
First possession.
That's ridiculous. Fumbles,
picks, what have you.
Yeah.
So be it. Being opportunistic on defense, special. I don't care when they come.
Yeah.
I don't care when the takeaways happen, as long as they happen.
Right.
When I think picks, I think Alec Ogletree picking off passes from short distances, which are almost impossible. I mean, that's like, you know what a jugs machine is, right?
Yes, of course.
Like a pitching machine?
Yeah.
It
comes out.
That's being 5 yards away from something that's traveling like 90 miles an hour.
Which is why I have never tried a jugs machine, and I don't think I ever will.
Well, yeah, I mean, knocking it down is one thing. Catching it is almost impossible. So receivers don't do that. To see him do that is amazing. LaMarcus Joyner is the second guy that comes to mind because the guy is a hitting machine. And early, if you're not ready for it, remember, in the NFL, today's NFL, you don't get to hit in practice.
Right.
So you're not ready for that level of violence that early.
Oh, that's a really good point.
Yeah, he comes downhill and boom, I mean, the ball's out. I mean, sometimes you want to ease into contact. Well, this guy's flying into contact. Mm-hmm. The ball comes out. So just being ready to get the ball out is one, and then recovering is something else. So this defense is opportunistic. They believe they're going to get the takeaway. You can see it in their pursuit to the football. They are absolutely tremendous. So I don't know if that's a stat. It should be. Maybe after this year it will be.
But I think it will be after this year.
First possession, second possession, as long as you take it away, everything's good.
Yeah, it is. And it just was funny this week that Corey Littleton was the one who was able to do that, especially because he was coming in on a spot start. Now, this is actually one of these things that because we're recording on Tuesday, we don't really have enough information on Mark Barron to really know what that issue is, whether or not he might be able to play against the 49ers, even if he is able to.
Yeah.
I doubt that he will. But he had an Achilles issue that sort of flared up early in the morning against Tennessee. And now you got to remember, I mean, Rams were playing that game 10 a.m. body clock time. So basically you're getting up at around 7:38, right? So 7:30, that's 5:30 L.A. time. The weather's cold and everything. Oh, yeah. Things just aren't quite right, and that's what McVay said happened with Mark Barron. So we'll figure out more about whatever Mark Barron's injury status is later on in the week. But just with Corey Littleton, to be able to come in, and we know he's gotten these practice reps, but to come in the way he did and to make an impact play on that first possession, that was huge.
Yeah, they really like him. You may actually gain some oomph against the run with him in there. Oh, yeah, the guy can absolutely bring it. He's dynamic. They loved him coming out. They thought he might be a little wiry, a little skinny coming out of Washington, and he's really filled into that frame of his. So I think he's going to get nothing but better. The thing I like about him, like I said, he's unafraid to stick his nose in there.
Right.
He will hit you. He's great on special teams. Mm-hmm. And he's also he's raising his football IQ to see where he lines up and how he lines up and how he's getting guys lined up in front. He's still asking for direction sometimes from the middle linebacker, from Ogletree. Hey, where am I going? Who do I cover? X, Y, and Z. But for the most part, the guy's a ready-made football player.
Well, he's very athletic. And I think you can see the way he plays and how he's getting better. And when he's in there on defense, and again, the practice reps he's been getting because Mark Barron has been sitting out practices and different things like that, that helps him on Sundays.
Oh, yeah.
Because it helped him against Seattle when he had to come in after Mark Barron played only three plays and then making a spot start basically after a surprise happens in the morning and the starter can't go. Well, that's a pretty big deal that you're able to get your first pick on the second play from scrimmage. Then he's able to get a sack later, and that really forces a field goal because the Titans had been moving and they were in the red zone.
I would bet once you move into the postseason, I bet he becomes more of a pass rush threat than you know right now.
Really?
Because he's that athletic.
Interesting.
Yeah, I mean, he's good actually backing up from the quarterback in pass coverage. Yeah. He can cover people. You see he can take the ball away, and he's good in run defense. But going towards the quarterback, I think we haven't even scratched the surface.
Probably
when you
not.
Start to send him on blitzes, and he's one-on-one with a running back, depending on who that guy is, either you're getting run over or run around.
Yeah,
and he's athletic enough and wiry enough to get his hands on the quarterback and at least disrupt, if not get the sack.
They've had Corey Littleton in there in certain times, basically kind of creating a couple packages for him, you know, where he has come off the edge a little bit, where he's also been sort of lined up, also as an inside backer. So maybe that's something that I think they've done a little bit against teams that run it very well.
Mm-hmm.
I recall them doing that against Philadelphia, I believe.
Yeah.
So that's something that, again, could be a factor going forward.
The three guys, and I hope Mark Barron is healthy. And if you have to go regular, like if this were a meaningful game, an all-important game against San Francisco, they actually have a fullback and can go 21 personnel.
Right.
That's when I'd like to see, and when you would see, all three guys out there.
Yeah.
Barron, Littleton, and Ogletree. Yeah. I mean, that's a pretty good group.
Right.
They can all run. They're all pretty good run stuffers. I mean, that's a pretty good trio.
Mm-hmm.
But at some point in the near future, I would bet that you're going to see a lot more of him going towards the quarterback in obvious passing situations.
All right. Well, let's talk about these playoff scenarios because now we can do
that. Oh, man. I can't, my level of math is not that high.
Mine is not really
it's
either.
It's crazy.
But basically, so I did get an email, and that's why I'm going to pull out my phone right now, and that shows all of the different scenarios that can happen.
Oh, boy.
Because there are a lot of different possibilities based on Minnesota, Chicago, Rams, San Francisco, New Orleans, Tampa Bay, Carolina, Atlanta, Seattle, Arizona.
Okay, tell me if I'm wrong. Are you locked into the third seed?
You are not locked
into the
third
seed. You are not locked into the third.
No.
But you can't cannot improve your position with a win.
Correct.
Okay, that makes sense. That's the best way I can explain it.
Right.
Go ahead.
And so that, to me, is why I almost think it's just more valuable to just rest your starters.
Okay.
Because basically, if you win, you're in a situation where you're more likely to face Seattle or Atlanta than anybody else. But
if you win.
If you win.
If you lose.
If you lose.
I hate even saying that, right?
Right. Then you're going to, you could play Carolina, New Orleans, Atlanta, or Seattle.
Wow. Okay. It behooves you to win.
It behooves you to win.
Yeah.
It does.
And that's every week. Okay. So
right.
There's nothing different.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
It does behoove you to win. But again, you're still there, if I'm looking at this correctly, and because there are so many of these things and I'm looking at them, I'm not sure. But I do believe that there's a possibility that you could win and then you could still get jumped by Carolina.
Yeah, Minnesota has to lose.
Right.
Yeah.
Minnesota has to lose. So, again, if that happens, it happens. And I guess it does behoove you to win. But at the same time, like, it just, to me, I don't know, man. I just almost feel like you
well,
want to get
way,
those starters some rest.
You know, and I've had fun with this. You know, would you rather avoid Julio Jones or Cam Newton? And at this point, it doesn't matter. They're all good.
Right.
They all can beat you and vice versa. So,
right.
Opponent, great. So be it. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
But I said this a long time ago when Cam Newton came out of Arizona. or Auburn, and watching him grow and mature in the National Football League, mm-hmm. just his ability and how he plays against the Rams defense, that's probably the one guy, if I could pick, that I would rather avoid in the postseason.
You know, so as I'm looking at this, what I kind of didn't realize is that Carolina will not be able to jump the Rams if the Rams win and if Carolina wins.
Okay.
I kind of thought that they would, but
okay.
apparently, like, looking at this, that's not the case.
That's
so,
fuzzy math, man. Yeah.
Yeah, it is fuzzy math, but this is what I'm looking at is coming from the league, so that's how I know I'm right about it.
Right.
So, in that way, I guess it really does behoove you to win, because if you win, you are pretty much locked into that number three seed.
And this is funny. When you give out those scenarios and you throw out Seattle, people are actually, oh, you can play Seattle again, and they're relieved. Why? Remember, you're 1-1 against them. Yeah, and they beat you at home.
They did beat you at home.
Okay, 42-7, I get it.
And that was not that long ago. You know what I'm talking about? Like a revenge game?
Yeah.
If anybody probably knows how to play revenge games well, I think it would be them.
Is Russell Wilson still alive?
Yep, he is.
Then fear Seattle.
Yes.
I don't care what you did to them. They're still good.
Right.
Yeah, so either way, look, opponent doesn't matter. If this team is firing on all cylinders, they still have to play you as well.
They do, and, you know, you could be facing Carolina if you lose. You could be facing New Orleans if you fall. And there's also the possibility of Atlanta, apparently. But, again, it's just, to me, I don't know. I just feel like it's probably worth it to get those starters some rest.
Well, yeah, I mean...
Despite the fact that if you win, you're likely locked into that number
no
three
one
seed.
Is good enough to call their shot against, I want to play this team. Maybe in maybe in the NBA, yes, not in the NFL, where anything could happen.
Right.
I bet the same people were shocked that last week was a game. Oh, mm-hmm. they should just mow down Tennessee. Well, this is the NFL.
I kind of thought that they should have mowed down Tennessee.
Well, the other
there.
Team gets paid, too.
They do get paid,
and they
too.
Work
and,
hard.
Yeah, and they work hard. And Tennessee, especially, they have good players. They have Marcus Mariota, who is a good young quarterback. They have a good defense. They got a really good defensive coordinator. So it's not a surprise that – and they have a really good returner, too, in Dory Jackson.
Yeah.
Right? Like, it's not a surprise that –
team has lost, what, three straight, and they still have a shot for the postseason?
Yes.
Yeah, they're not bad.
Right.
Yeah.
If they beat Jacksonville, they'll be in.
Yeah.
So you're right. They're not a bad football team. It's not like, you know, you're going to play the 0-15 Browns.
It's different. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So, look, opponent doesn't matter, but I still think – keeping Jared Goff, Todd Gurley, X, Y, and Z, your star players, your Pro Bowl guys, keeping them healthy far outweighs picking your opponent.
I really do,
far
too.
Outweighs.
Because, it's like you were saying earlier, you know, the Rams just have bigger fish to fry than this game.
Yes.
You know, and despite the fact that Jimmy Garoppolo is playing well, and I understand the fact that, like, look, nobody really wants to pay to come see backups. Like, that, I understand that. But this team wants to win the Super Bowl. And you have an opportunity to do that because you've punched your ticket to the tournament already.
Right.
You're not going to be able, you know, nothing is guaranteed beyond tomorrow in the playoffs, right? The only thing you've guaranteed yourself is a home playoff game.
Right.
So no matter who your opponent is, you're going to be in.
Right. Now, the Rams have actually something to play for, so to speak. You just illustrated that.
Right.
But from a San Francisco perspective, what is the point of playing Garoppolo? You know he's your guy.
Keep your forward momentum, I guess.
Okay, but you know he's your guy.
Yeah.
He's played well. You've been better because of him. I think you've finally started winning time of possession.
Right.
Your first downs are up. You're on the field longer.
Yeah.
Your defense, as a consequence, is playing better.
Right.
Your special teams, because of the esprit de corps, is playing better. So, obviously, he's as good as advertised. Why play him on the road in the Coliseum, the last game of the year, in a game that doesn't matter? Does six wins matter?
I think six wins is better than five.
One better than five. Actually, if you lose it, it's actually better for?
Draft position.
Absolutely. So, I mean, there's no guarantee Garoppolo starts and plays the game.
It's an interesting point. I mean, I guess just from their perspective, and obviously we're not there and I'm not there, so I don't know, but it just seems like because of the forward momentum that they have, and momentum is like one of these words that we use in sports, and it doesn't mean that technically by definition, but I don't know, you have a real positive feeling about this team right now if you're them, right? You know, you got Carlos Hyde kind of jokingly saying, oh, next year we're going to the Super Bowl. They have not lost since Jimmy Garoppolo took over a quarterback.
Yeah.
You know.
They scored 44 points against Jacksonville.
Right.
That's to me, that's it.
Right.
When you beat them up like that,
yeah.
Garoppolo's my guy, we're better, that's it. C.J. Beathard, it's your game. Hmm. That's what I would say.
To show what
why
you
even
can
risk
going
it?
Into
right.
this.
Why even
right.
risk it?
Yeah, I guess. I mean, but even if Jimmy Garoppolo suffers an injury, you know, you do have the entire offseason in order
okay.
to take care of that.
What if it's a 12-month injury? What if it's Teddy
right.
Bridgewater all over again?
Right.
Yeah. I mean, anything
yeah.
could happen. That's what,
true.
So, and even if you do, let's say the Rams, and we don't know. I mean, the Rams could play everybody.
Yeah.
If they wanted to.
It's true.
But even if you were playing a shorthanded Rams squad, you're playing against Sean Mannion. What does that win do for you if you're San Francisco, if you're Jimmy Garoppolo? Yeah, we beat the Rams at the end of the year, but they didn't play anybody. So what momentum do you have?
But you, right. a win is a win. I don't know.
Right,
you still,
right.
You want to win these games. You want to win every game you can.
Very true. I'm with you. You take every victory you can, but you have to be smart,
right,
too.
Right. And yeah, I just – the way I see it, it's just, okay, even if you are – even if you're in a situation where you drop to the number four seed and you end up having to play New Orleans or Carolina
– If the Rams dropped in Tennessee and they really needed this one, then it's Garoppolo, Goff. Let's go.
Yeah.
Yeah, but now, come on.
You wrapped
What's
it
the
up.
Point?
It's,
right.
It's yeah, you do have just bigger fish to fry.
Right.
But I think knowing that if you win, you are almost you pretty much locked in at the number three seed, mm-hmm. that kind of does make a bit of a difference.
Right.
We'll
see.
And yeah.
Yeah.
And fans say, you know, you want to be the highest seed because that means that, you know, should one of the two home playoff two divisional game hosts
yeah.
lose, you know what I'm saying? The,
right.
the teams that have a bye. Should one of them lose, then, and you're still winning, then you're the highest seed.
True.
But I think my bigger point to that is, A, that you're only guaranteed tomorrow. So you cannot look like two games past and think, oh, well, if, you know, then we
if,
can
right.
do, like, I don't know about
right.
that. And number two, actually, the Rams have played better on the road than home this year. I mean, if we just look at it, like they have.
I mean, it's hard to disprove it. Yeah,
they, you know, they're yeah. they're 8-1 in games away from the Los Angeles Memorial Coliseum.
You had Philly at home. You had Seattle at home.
You had Washington at home.
Washington at home. I mean, Washington was rolling at the time.
Yeah, Washington
Ooh,
was
good.
Rolling
yeah,
at the
they
time.
They were good.
And the only
yeah.
other game you lost was at Minnesota.
Yeah,
and Minnesota also was rolling at that time. And
yep.
there's that was just a game where you just couldn't really get anything going.
Yeah,
so. Again,
give them credit. That defense was good. That
yes.
Yeah.
No, that defense is great. It's been great all year,
yeah.
and they were great on Saturday when they shut out the Packers, too.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, that's just – it's fun to talk about that this year, you know?
True.
Thinking about what we were talking about a year ago.
Draft.
Yeah.
Right now we're talking
Head
about the draft.
Candidates.
Yes. Oh, let's not do that.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Let's exercise that. The culture is different now.
The culture
Miles
is
wearing a jacket. That's how different it is.
I was wearing a jacket last
wow.
year.
Yeah.
I'm just wearing a jacket because we shot Rams Report.
It's
and
like
when
you
were I didn't
going
go
to a
back
funeral last year. Now this is more like going to a party.
It is.
Anyway.
It's way more like
yes.
going to a party. So before we get out of here, how was your Christmas? Was
great.
Yeah.
Fun. Yeah, they're still there. They're still at my house. They won't leave. I love my family. Yeah.
Well, it's like 12:40 on December 26th. I feel like it's time for them to go.
No,
right?
They can stay as long as they want.
Yeah?
It's my family.
You're
saying,
nicer than I
I'm
am.
I'm saying that to you publicly. Now when we're off air,
oh,
yeah, time to go home. No, I'm just kidding. No, it was great.
You
How about
just
yours?
Told on yourself.
I'm just kidding. How about yours?
No, it was fun. I mean, I didn't really do much of anything. I was just kind of in the apartment watching football and basketball.
By yourself?
Yeah.
You could have come over, man.
Oh, no.
We had more
really,
than enough food.
That's really okay.
You should have come over, man. We had fun. The kids had fun.
Well,
yeah.
I was up the night before. We were celebrating the division championship.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
Had a little fun.
Yeah, had a little
it's
fun.
It's nice to
so.
Be young and single
yeah.
and, yeah, all
Well,
that
I
stuff.
Didn't really go out, but I was with some of my colleagues.
Good.
And we had a nice time.
How did it feel?
It felt good.
Good.
That
yeah.
was cool.
Yeah.
It feels good to cover a division champion, man.
I can't wait until that gets old.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, another hat.
Oh, man.
Oh, another t-shirt.
Darn. I don't think it's going to be old.
I can't wait till that gets old.
For a really long time. All right, everybody. So thank you so much for tuning into this edition of Between the Horns. For DeMarco Farr, I'm Miles Simmons. We'll see you next time. Do you know